Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Serie A fan. Double the action this week, and for Napoli, double the goals, as Spalletti's men hit 8. We discuss their credentials and compare them to an upgraded Milan, a resilient Inter, and even Atalanta make it into our considerations after a slow start leaves them in 5th. After all, it's not as if they start the season trying to win the Scudetto. All this, plus tributes to all manner of honourable behaviour and a moronic double booking on this episode of Scudetto. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Scudetto. We've had a double game week this week, and the tail end of that is actually still going on as we record, with Roma currently hosting Udinese. They're 1-0 up as we speak, but we'll come back to that a bit later on, because there's plenty to catch up on in the meantime. Boaz, we should just quickly mention, hello by the way, but before we catch up on what you've been up to and what you're drinking, we should mention that you were once more a guest on the Milan Obsession podcast. So for any of our listeners who are especially interested in Milan, check that out. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, actually, Buzz. What was the topic on this particular episode?
Well, we had a nice natter about the games between Milan, Lazio, the midweek game against Liverpool, and of course the Juventus game.
Good stuff. Probably be covering some of that ground on this podcast, but obviously a more in-depth look at, from the Milan side of things over there. So do check that out. But yeah, anyway, Buzz, how are you? What have you been up to this week?
I'm doing very well, apart from the fact that I got heat stroke on a couple of days ago, and I was in a pretty bad way and almost got rushed to hospital. But other than that, everything's fine. If you're into projectile vomiting, that was my shtick on Monday. So yeah, very fun.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about that. We obviously covered for you in the predictions league, but you will have to catch up by doing the Tifosi Down Under predictions league for us this week. So no rest for you there. But have you got a beer that you can tell us about?
I'm drinking a Pressure Drop IPA, which I believe I've had in the past. And it's a very nice IPA, so I'm looking forward to it.
Good stuff. Kenny, are you there? Can you hear us?
I'm here, yes. Yeah. Yeah. How's it going?
Great. How are you? Yeah, good, thank you. How about yourself?
Good. Yeah, I've basically not had time to do anything other than watch football this week. There's just it's just been crazy,
but it's been fun.
I'm not complaining about it.
Was it Thursday to Thursday? There's been a game every night, right? Seven days in a row.
Absolutely, yeah.
So yeah, plenty to get into.
And it's been glorious.
You're on the neck oils again, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, back on the sauce, and I'm back on the coming back in style with a Beavertown neck oil, which is delicious.
Yeah. Greatest beer in the world. Or at least from the greatest stadium in the world.
Have you got yourself a beer, Oscar?
I have. I've got a Maku Brewing Alvara IPA. It's very good. You know, sometimes you get like a weird flavor of something from a beer. Like, I remember I was on a brewery tour once, and a guy described like one of the aromas as like a bit like cat piss, but it was still a nice beer. And this like has a slight kind of...
This guy was trying to sell the beer to you.
Yeah, but like, it's something kind of horrible, but there's like a little... This has something in common with that smell. And it's like, this has like slightly a little bit like washing up liquid, but it's still a very nice IPA.
Sounds delicious.
Hard to describe. Anyway, nothing.
I'll be rushing to buy that one.
Yeah, they didn't put that on the can, weirdly. It's just a picture of a seal. I think it's a seal or a sea lion.
Is it a bottle of fairy liquid that you've got tonight, Oscar?
Yeah, I'm recording in the kitchen. I've just picked up the wrong can. Oh dear. Yeah, right. Let's start with Napoli then, shall we? Since they are currently top of the league. Kenny, you were saying last week, that it's about time we started taking them a bit more seriously. Maybe we should take it one step further and start thinking about, you know, possible title credentials, or at least, you know, the possibility that they could start putting a run together. How do you assess that at this early stage?
Well, I think I was saying last week that I do think that they're title contenders. I should put a massive caveat on this, that in the at the moment, they're looking immense, and a huge reason for that is the performances of some key players. I mean, no doubt Spalletti's got them playing fantastically, but I think, you know, we still need to see how Osimhen's fitness is going to be this season. And there are other players that have had spells. Koulibaly has been absolutely fantastic. He's a player who has had spells where he's been off the boil. So it's down to them keeping those key players fit and those key players doing it for the entire season. But they are looking absolutely sensational. I've had the good fortune to see their last three games, actually. And yeah, they just seem to just be on an absolute... not absolute role, and they're winning. I mean, they're winning games by four goals, or the last two games anyway. But even then, I mean, they could have been more than that. So yeah, they're going to take some stopping, I think.
Yeah, they are looking very impressive, aren't they? But as we just caught up on the goals, and you described Osimhen's pace as being like a Tasmanian devil.
I keep trying to crowbar in Osimhen reviews pun into Osimhen, but it's just not working. So I'm giving it out there to the world for someone else to work on.
Yeah. But I guess the other team that we're talking about who have got a similar record so far to Napoli, and the other potential early title contenders have got to be Milan. So we should talk about the week they've had. Obviously, a close game with Juve, maybe one that you'd be a bit disappointed not to take all 3 points out of.
First of all, to raise a slight parallel with Napoli, Napoli did kind of have to dig in deep to get the points in the first two games of the season. And I think that kind of was the platform for them to build on these two 4-0 victories back-to-back. Likewise, Milan now came up with two games that were slightly awkward for them. The Juventus game in particular is a game that Milan usually don't win, let's be honest, and particularly at the stadium. So it was very interesting to see Milan coming all out and attacking and actually conceding a goal that was due to the fact that they were all in the opposing half. It was a really badly defended goal, but in a strange way, I have to praise Milan's attitude for being so offensive despite going away to Juventus. Perhaps this is a bigger snapshot of where Juventus are right now, in the sense that maybe they don't impose that same fear on clubs as they have in the past. But in any case, Milan, as you said, could have taken all 3 points. Kalulu had a very good chance towards the end of the game that Szczesny did really well to stop. But then Milan came up against Venezia at home, which is the game where in the last two seasons Milan might have dropped points. For the first 60 minutes, it looked like this might be one of those dreaded 0-0 games. Venezia came to San Siro to defend. They lined up well behind the ball, and they kind of let Milan have all possession. But Milan created chances, but perhaps with about with 6 out of the 10, out of the 11 starters subbed from the previous game, perhaps there was a slight problem with the affinity or something like that. Also, it has to be said that Pioli might have messed up his initial tactics by playing Tomori on the wing as opposed to at centre-back. But as soon as Chiari got injured, Tomori was moved back into the centre and the aforementioned Kalulu came on and Milan became stronger. What changed his game was Pioli throwing on his, let's call it, his more talented players. Let's put it this way. Salemakers on for Florenzi was definitely a big change. And my friend Theo Hernandez on the left, who set up one goal and scored another. Overall, job done and a great performance considering that this Milan side were missing 8 players.
Yeah, definitely. And we should, you picked out a few kind of performances there, but we should also talk about Tonali. Kenny was sharing some stats with us just beforehand about how much he's improved this season so far compared to last season, kind of. I think an average of 66.3 passes played per game, up from 37.8, creating 1.3 chances per game, up from 0.6. How excited about are you about that? And what do you think's kind of contributed to that sort of rapid improvement?
I feel that Tonali has really matured over the summer. And obviously, it was alluded to in some areas, some places, that maybe he didn't play so well last year because he was trying to get Brescia to reduce their price for Milan, him being a lifelong Milan fan. But I think what was quite curious for me was that this was a game where Locatelli came up against Tonali. And while there's been much fanfare about Locatelli throughout the summer, and justifiably so, and also a little bit of ribbing towards Milan about the fact that they let him go, I thought that Tonali was the better player in this game and possibly is the better player overall. So I don't think Milan have necessarily lost out. And I also think that it's very easy to look back at the transfers that were made 3 or 4 seasons ago for players who weren't at the level that they are today and say, oh, we should have held on to him.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's not a huge surprise to see Tonali playing like this for Milan, because he was, as a teenager, he was doing this for Brescia the season before last. I mean, I was raving about him to you guys before we actually started this podcast as well. And it looks to me a little bit like he's just kind of just so much more comfortable in the surroundings at San Siro now than he was last season. There's a huge element of confidence, I think. Yeah, among those stats that I shared with you, which came from the Gazzetta, should really give credit where it's due there. But among those stats were things like take-ons that were considerably up. Yes, the chances created.
Yeah, successful dribbles up from 0.2 to 1.3.
Yeah, and the shots that he's taken on as well. You know, he's like, I think he's kind of realized that he can be, you know, an important player. He doesn't need to fit into the squad. He can actually be one of the guys that drags this team along. And what his hero, a lot of people compared him to Pirlo, obviously, and undoubtedly his passing ability and his vision, you know, there are like some echoes of that, but his hero growing up was Gattuso, hence the reason that he wears the number 8 at Milan. And there are elements of that to it as well. So absolutely, I just think that what we're seeing now at Milan is what we saw the promise of at Brescia. And I think Milan definitely got a good one. And I wasn't, you know, at all worried about him last season, to be honest, because, I mean, class is permanent, right? And you could see that this kid had it in abundance when he was playing for Brescia.
And to be honest, last year he could be slightly in the shadows because Bennacer and Kessi were doing such a good job and being so solid that in a way there was time to drip him into the team very slowly, and obviously this has paid dividends.
Yeah, and Kenny, you actually wanted to highlight sort of the other central midfielder that Milan have actually done a good bit of business with, the kind of upgrade from Çalhanoğlu, who's obviously gone to Inter, Brahim Diaz, who's kind of slotted right in.
Yeah, well, I mean, centre midfielder, I would have him as a trequartista, and I don't want to take credit for that either, because that's something that Pioli said, but I think it's very evident when you watch him play that he is a trequartista more than a sort of a centre mid. To me, he's a player that grows with every game. This season, I think he was singled out as well. We spoke earlier on in the, you know, in the season, that, like the first episode that we recorded or something, we spoke about how Leao and Tonali had been singled out as, you know, players who'd come back after the summer and been better. But yeah, he's one who really, I mean, he's just the sort of footballer that I love watching. He's got, like, in the same way that I love watching Paulo Dybala when he's on, he's just got absolutely magic feet. He's so inventive. His technique's unbelievable. Despite his size, he seems to have like a real strength about him. He's just a really, really entertaining footballer to watch. And I think becoming more and more pivotal and really kind of growing into the role. And I don't think in the long term Milan are going to miss Çalhanoğlu, to be honest, because I think he's an upgrade on him. If I'm brutally honest, maybe perhaps not now, but I think, you know, by the time we're kind of halfway through this season, I think Milan will have long forgotten about Hakan Çalhanoğlu.
Yeah, anyone who follows Baez on Twitter will know his views on Hakan Çalhanoğlu, so maybe we won't get into that.
Perhaps it fortifies point. What Kenny just said, in that to know that Real Madrid refused to have a buy clause in this loan deal, and that, according to Carlo Ancelotti at least, they still have big hopes for Brahim Diaz at the Bernabeu in the future. So, I mean, hopefully for Serie A and for Milan, he'll stick around for many years to come. But clearly, his renaissance is being spotted by his parent club as well.
Yeah. Anyway, that Milan side looking very exciting, and certainly fair that they're being considered up there with Napoli as kind of early contenders. But that's enough about Milan. Kenny, do you think it's fair that people are describing Atalanta's start to the season as slow? I mean, after, what, five games, they're sitting in fifth place, 10 points, not kind of very far behind, and big game against Inter at the weekend. How do you kind of assess this season so far?
Yeah, well, famously, Atalanta are slow starters. But yeah, I'm not sure if you mentioned it there, but yeah, they're actually 1 point better off this season than they were at this stage last season. But I think that there are the signs, as we kind of see every season with Atalanta, there are signs that things are starting to really kind of click into gear. Huge for them, I think, that Martin De Roon is back in the team after that suspension for his antics at the end of the Milan game last season, the last game of last season. But
starting a riot, as you described it.
Yeah, but they've never, they've never looked the same team when they haven't had, and this is something that anyone who follows Atalanta regularly says, it's not like huge insight or anything, but they never look the same team when De Roon and Freuler aren't paired together. But I think this season they might have actually found a solution to that, because Koop Meiners has obviously been brought in. That was a very kind of drawn out transfer. So he kind of arrived late in the preseason, but he's been gradually introduced by Gasperini, and he looks, I don't even know if it's fair to say that he looks like an able deputy. I mean, I think there's real competition now for the first time in the last few seasons, certainly for that central midfield berth. So that's really, really encouraging. And he, obviously, he's only started one game now, but he's at the point where he's gone from being brought on with 5 minutes to go to being brought on with half an hour to go to starting a game. I think Gasperini trusts him now. And I think he's absolutely right to, because he looks like an absolutely fantastic player. But a slow start to the season is just kind of a typical Atalanta start to the season. And they're, 2 points off the Champions League spots. So the most important thing at this stage of the season for Atalanta is very much to kind of just keep in touch. Don't let the gap to the big guys be too big, really.
Yeah, and potential of having players coming back in before this weekend. Muriel, perhaps. I haven't seen the latest.
Yeah, so this comes from, I mean, it's something that's been kind of dripped out in the Italian press, and Gasperini actually addressed it at his press conference. I think it was the post-match press conference, that he could possibly be back before the international break. I think Gasperini said that this weekend might be a bit early for him, so he might not make the Inter game, but he could very well be back for the Milan game. And I mean, that would be huge as well, because at the moment Atalanta are relying on Zapata completely, and obviously Piccoli as well, who actually did very well when he came on in midweek, really put himself about. But you know, we know that Muriel is capable of absolute magic, so that's good as well. And I think something that's kind of a similar theme between Atalanta and Milan, Boaz mentioned all the injuries Milan have had. Atalanta have also had similar sort of injury worries. Obviously, they've got Hatibor out, they've had Muriel out, they've been without De Roon, as I mentioned, and all of those players kind of slowly coming back into the equation. They've kind of ridden out a tough spell, really. Just one kind of final point that I wanted to mention, which I didn't earlier, was Gasperini's press conference when he said, I think he was asked about this slow start, and he said, like, it's not as if we start the season with the objective of winning the Scudetto. And went on to say...
really? I mean, that's most clubs' objective, really, isn't it?
Well, I think people forget... Like, people see Atalanta having qualified for the Champions League 3 years in a row, that everyone's excited. Everyone around Europe now knows that Atalanta are, like, one of the most exciting kind of teams out there. But, yeah, I think within Bergamo, I mean, you look at the kind of wage bill, you look at the history of the club, and I think... If Atalanta were every season that Atalanta qualified for the Champions League is an immense achievement, and if they can do that again this season, that would be great. And just to finish off what Gasperini was saying, he was like, "Now we'll play Milan and Inter, and we'll see where we are." And I think very much along the same lines. This is the time where Atalanta are beginning to click into gear. Let's see how you measure up against the big guys.
Yeah. Very sensible approach, I guess, taking it just a game at a time. And let's talk a little bit about the next game. But first, Baez, let's catch up on Inter, because I think they do deserve some praise, don't they? They obviously beat a Fiorentina side who have looked very good so far this season, 3-1. And then the 6-1 against Bologna before that. They've started to really kind of show their credentials as well, haven't they?
On paper, at least, both these fixtures could have been kind of tricky for Inter. Bologna came into the game having won two matches in a row and having kept two clean sheets, and they were smashed 6-1. I think poor Aaron Hickey is still dreaming of Dumfries.
I think he's dreaming of his first Serie A goal.
But personally, I was going to come on to that. But then he scored his first Serie A goal, so now he can stop dreaming about Dumfries. Possibly the win against Fiorentina is more impressive, because Fiorentina kind of bossed them for 45 minutes and probably deserved a little bit more from that game. But Inter showed the character and the resources to come back. And that man, Edin Dzeko, is really finding his scoring boots.
Yeah, he'll be needing them this weekend. How do you assess their chances against Atalanta? What are you expecting from the game?
If you remember last year, Atalanta dominated the game at San Siro and lost 1-0. Conte, in typical Conte style, was very cynical. So far this season, Inzaghi has shown a much more open approach to his games, and possibly that will benefit Atalanta with their blitzkrieg football. But it's one of these games that is really hard to call, because you never know what you're going to get with either team.
Yeah, we go along with that, Kenny. You taking the Gasperini attitude of just taking it a game at a time?
Well, I think you've got to, but I think Inter equally are doing that as well. I mean, we spoke about the Gasperini playing down expectations. Inzaghi played down expectations in exactly the same way at the start of the season. He said, look, with the players that have gone out of the door, we need to be thinking about Champions League qualification rather than title aspirations. And I'm sure that, well, Pioli actually didn't say the same for Milan, because I think Leao came out and said that they're absolute title contenders, and Pioli said, if my players want to go for the Scudetto, then they have to show that they're perfect and they can do it. But I digress. Yes, the game between Atalanta and Inter, or Inter and Atalanta, it's a difficult one to call. I think this is probably the first big challenge that Inter have actually faced this season. I mean, Fiorentina, yeah, okay, and Fiorentina beat Atalanta. But Fiorentina did very much run out of steam, I think, as well. I mean, we can give credit to Inter for coming back, but yeah, Fiorentina equally just ran themselves into the ground, I think, in those opening 45 minutes, perhaps.
Yeah, and,
because
more on the sending off later.
Well, yeah, we'll come to that later on. But possibly just Vincenzo Italiano's sort of high-intensity press and things is glorious to watch, and it's wonderful when it's kind of, you know, when you've got a week to recover. But at the moment, with the games coming thick and fast, perhaps that kind of worked against them a little bit. But equally, Atalanta as well have still, I've said that there are signs that they're getting up to the level. They still haven't reached the sort of Atalanta that we're kind of used to from kind of later on in the season. So it's like Boaz said, it's really, really difficult to call. I think it's going to be a really entertaining game. I think more entertaining than watching Atalantico on Conte's Inter, because I think, Simone Inzaghi's sides are a completely different beast. I think it will be more open. But yeah, it's a game that I can't wait to see.
Yeah, indeed. And that's the early kickoff on the Saturday. And then on the Sunday, we've got the first Rome derby, Lazio-Roma, which another, obviously, extremely important game early on in the season. We should just bring you the news as well, as we've been recording. Roma did win their game this evening 1-0, goal from Tammy Abraham in the first half. The only bad news for them for the weekend is that Pellegrini got sent off late in that game, so obviously won't be available for the game of the weekend.
And he's been phenomenal for them, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
And supposedly his contract situation is about to be resolved, because he's a free agent this summer. And if any clubs are paying attention, they'll see that he's one of the standout stars in Serie A at the moment.
Yeah, but Mourinho would be happy about that result, Boaz. He's been sort of playing down the negativity around Roma's first loss and saying all the right things this week, hasn't he?
I mean, I'd love to mock Mourinho right now, particularly after the unexpected loss to Verona, but he seems to be saying all the right things. And his quote, particularly after the Verona game, was, "Look, we won six games, we didn't win 60, and we've lost one game, we haven't lost 10," which kind of makes sense. As you keep saying every episode, the wheels are going to come off the cart at some point. But right now, he's really saying all the right things and making all the right moves. And if I were a Roma fan, I'd be very happy right now.
Yeah, and it looks like a good time to play Lazio as well, who've struggled this evening against Torino, only earning a 1-1 draw with a very late penalty from Immobile.
And that off the back of three defeats, was it, in a row?
For Lazio.
Yeah.
It's a draw.
A draw with Cagliari. A draw,
you know. Oh, right, yeah.
But they haven't picked up full points since the first two matches of the league, including Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
Frank's star caution.
Sarri ball still to kick in.
So maybe, Sarri ball still to kick in, and maybe the wheels won't come off the Mourinho cart quite so soon. I'm hoping I'll jinx it by saying that.
The question is, how many cigarettes will Sarri smoke before Lazio start playing good football? I estimate 1,500.
Yeah, you think it's in the thousands, not the tens of thousands?
Considering how many he smokes a day, you might be more right than I am.
Okay, we should do a quick roundup of what else has been going on that we don't have time to talk about in detail. Genoa confirmed, I think today or yesterday, they've sold a majority stake to a US investment firm, 777 Partners. Supposedly a very good return on investment for the former owner, Enrico Preziosi, who will be staying on the board. And a shout out to the Galazzo episode, Italian football podcast from November 2018, about this madman. Definitely have a listen.
This will be really sad news for all unemployed managers, because Preziosi was frequently firing and hiring people. So now, like, Genoa unfortunately will not have four or five managers on their books.
And player agents as well, because obviously the turnover of players, they've basically got a whole new first 11 this season as well, don't they?
So. And you have to consider that what could have been with Genoa, because they've had a lot of superstars come in and out of the club in recent years. And perhaps had they approached a model kind of like Udinese, where they held on to certain key players, De Paul, for example, they could have built on that. But instead, they were like, for example, Piatek, he scored 10, 15 goals in half a year at Genoa, and they immediately sold him. There was never any continuity at this club. And clearly, Preziosi listens to this pod and realized that I said they were a pointless club and immediately sold.
Well, their point is now return on investment, Boaz.
Good for him. What a loony.
Well, in better news for the profession, it does look like stadiums are going to be allowed to reopen. And it, in fact, officials have been on the radio hinting at this, and it's expected to be confirmed. They'll be allowed to reopen at 75% to 80% capacity, within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, up from the 50% at the moment,
currently, yeah. Juve obviously got their first win of the season against Spezia, scraping a 3-2, a game they really should have been winning.
And holding on a bit at the end, I felt.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll speak in more detail about the UV crisis again if it happens to continue.
We can't speak about it every week.
Yeah, indeed. Empoli picking up their second win, 2-0 victory over Cagliari yesterday. And tonight, as we mentioned, obviously Napoli beating Samp 4-0, Torino conceding to the late penalty to draw with Lazio, and the Roma game, which ended 1-0. We can't round up all of the fixtures from the last week, because as Kenny mentioned earlier, there's just been so many. But let's pick out a good week and a bad week, shall we? I mean, clear candidates, let's do good week first. Clear candidates have to be Napoli, having won 4-0 twice since we last recorded. Inter maybe in with a shout as well. And any votes or other nominations?
Well, for me, it's, I don't know, it's really difficult to pick between the two. Yeah, I don't know. Boaz, what do you think?
If we're going on the goal difference, we have to go for Napoli. And also, I think the manner of their victory was very impressive. And the fact that they're unexpectedly top of the league should give them, at least for this week, a good week.
Yeah, and two clean sheets. That's a clincher for me. Two clean sheets.
Yeah, okay. Good week for Napoli then.
Yeah.
Bad weeks, perhaps, a little bit more challenging. Venezia lost twice since we last recorded.
It feels a bit harsh to give this to Venezia, having lost at San Siro, having defended so bravely for 60-plus minutes. And my country mate, Dor Perez, almost scoring a handball goal towards the end of the first half. But they did lose in what is a relegation six-pointer earlier in the week. So not the best of weeks league-wise. Maybe we need to bring back Marco Rinaldi.
Possibly Udinese, or Udinese in with a shout. I mean, losing tonight and losing 4-0 to Napoli at the weekend. Although, yeah, I mean, just about everyone appears to be losing 4-0 to Napoli at the moment. So,
yeah, Udinese are a good shout. I was looking for the teams that had lost twice, and obviously they hadn't yet at the point I was looking at researching. But yeah,
by all accounts, Udinese played really well today against Roma. But these games where you play well and lose are probably the worst examples of points dropped along the way.
And then the other nomination was Fiorentina, which is harsh, but perhaps a kind of turning point loss against Juve and the sending off, which we will discuss later.
But they did win at the weekend. They did beat Genoa. So I think for me, it would be one out of Venezia and Udinese. Possibly more disappointing for Udinese. Venezia have still got to get up and running in Serie A, but Udinese had under the radar, had a really, really good start to the season. And they've kind of just started falling away very, very early. I think I might go for Udinese.
I second that.
Let's give it to Udinese. Okay, Buzz, are you ready for keeping up with the Italians?
This is my quick fire keeping up with the Italians.
You know what? I'm gonna steal your thunder and start off keeping up with the Italians this week, because I was watching a club called Tottenham Hotspur playing the Carabao How Now Brown Cow Cup, as Kenny likes to call it, against Wolves. And Gallini was the penalty shootout hero. He went the right way for 4 out of 5 of them. Got his hand to one, saved one. Honourable mention. Not an honourable mention, but...
And everyone's favourite rapper in the Premier League as well, so there's that, exactly. There's that as well.
So that's my contribution.
Moving on rapidly, we have European Cup winner Emerson Palmieri, who opened his account for Lyon this weekend and was subsequently voted as the best left-back of the game in the Ligue 1 Uber Eats competition. Fancy. We have Fabio Cannavaro, World Cup hero from 2006, who rescinded his contract with Guangzhou, who are owned by this Evergrande company, who are kind of being hung out to dry by the Chinese government, and therefore I think the club's being shut down or something like this. Roberto De Zerbi's Shakhtar got over the disappointment of losing to Sheriff in the Champions League by winning the Ukrainian Super Cup 3-0 against fierce rivals Dynamo Kiev. Our man Mario Balotelli got a goal and an assist in the match versus Besiktas, and made a point of pointing towards the Besiktas coach, who apparently in the past has said that Balotelli was brainless. I don't know who reported this information to Balotelli, because it's from like 2011 or something, but clearly Mario holds a grudge. I'd like to talk about a young guy called Cher Endur, who became the youngest player ever to score in the Portuguese second division, and he's an Italy under-18 product. And Italy, Azzurrini striker Calvin Yeboah scored a brace and is currently top goal scorer in the Austrian Bundesliga. And lastly, last week I gave an honorable mention to Matteo Mazzone for scoring straight off kickoff. You might have thought it was a bit of a one-off, but he did it again this week and scored. Started the second half, boom. I think goalkeepers should get a little bit wiser to this, but still, it's impressive.
That is impressive. And while we're on your honourable and dishonourable mentions, Baz, you can kick us off this week as well, starting off with a couple of honourables.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're starting off with a bit of a sombre honourable. It's for referee Marika Galizia, who was 27, and unfortunately, she passed away while giving birth to her son. She was a very promising referee and had been refereeing for 11 years and was expected to rise up in the divisions. And all the Serie A clubs tweeted support. And obviously, we give our own condolences, and we hope that her son remains healthy.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic of paying respects, we should obviously mark the passing of England's footballing legend, Jimmy Greaves.
And former AC Milan star.
Yeah, relevant to this podcast due to his time at AC Milan. And there have been some good anecdotes coming out about his time there this week, haven't there, Baz?
Yeah, apparently he made quite an impression in just 4 months in Italy. There was various autobiographies from the period, including Cesare Maldini's and Altafini, mention him. Maldini is quotes the story that everyone was kind of falling asleep in Ritiro, which is this the stuff that Italian clubs do, and that suddenly they heard a noise outside in the corridor and the light switched on and they opened the door and they could see Greavesy kind of walking along what they quote as being like the Pink Panther going out to a nightclub with his wife. He was spotted frequently at nightclubs in Milan, and the next day he was hung out to dry by Nereo Rocco, who didn't particularly appreciate his fun-loving approach to life, hence why Greaves left after just 4 months. And still he scored 9 goals in 11 matches, including 2 in a derby. This is a slight what-if, sliding door scenario, but had he not left when he did leave, if he had stuck around for the rest of the season, Milan became the first Italian club to lift the Champions League or the European Cup, as it was known then. And Greaves would have been the first English player to have lifted the trophy. But unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. But he's remembered very fondly, and everyone says that he was a phenomenal player.
Yeah, truly, truly incredible talent.
And apparently a great nightclub, great dancer at nightclubs too. So,
not surprised with that movement. Kenny, we've mentioned this a couple of times already on the podcast, but give us the details of Gonzalez is sending off in that Fiorentina game, and why he's getting a dishonourable for it.
Did we actually go into any details? Did we actually talk about being sent off? So this is, I mean, it's actually led to quite a lot of debate in Italy as to whether it was a horrific refereeing decision or an idiotic decision by Gonzalez. I personally think it's both. Because I think it was Bastoni who was like grabbing him by the shirt. I mean, people were calling for Chiellini to be sent off for his shirt pull in the European Championships final, the Euros final. I mean, Bastoni had a similar amount of Gonzalez's shirt, and obviously Gonzalez got the free kick, and the referee decided that it wasn't a bookable offence, and Gonzalez protested quite angrily, got booking for protests, nothing unusual about that really, but then proceeded to clap very kind of forcefully in the referee's face. And I mean, people have been saying you can't get away with that in Italy. You can't get away with that anywhere. Like, after you've just been booked, going up to the referee's face, giving him a slow hand clap, like very like forcefully, just idiotic. I mean, and Fiorentina, I think, were 2-1 down at the time, so very much still in the game. And yeah, just idiotic. I think he's come out and apologized actually on social media, and well, he
what,
should.
The referee or Gonzalez?
Gonzalez has. As he should. And yeah, I think he got one match ban for it. So yeah, just idiotic.
But Let's hope he doesn't applaud the one match ban.
It has to be said that there's no other walk of life where applauding someone sarcastically gets such a big punishment. Can you imagine?
I'm not sure I would walk up to my manager in any job and
you want me to do this report. Well done, you.
I think you might be disciplined in any possibly other profession for doing that.
Try out, can you see how John reacts? Yeah, to change tack completely, I wanted to give an honourable to Roma, who are offering fans drop-in vaccination at the stadium and a discount, or I guess a partial refund on their season ticket if they get vaccinated. So taking some proactive action.
Great honorable initiative.
Indeed. Kenny, let's have your goals honourable next.
Yeah, I mean, there have been so many incredible goals, and I think I've been getting a bit carried away with the goals memorables recently. So I'm going to try this out this week, and it might be what I do from now on, but I'm just picking one. And I know this is much to Boaz's disgust because he thinks there was a better goal in this game, but I'm giving one to Pellegrini for his back heel against Verona. Just incredible inventiveness, incredible reaction, incredible technique to flick the ball in at the first post. Really, really lovely to see. And that's going to get my goals honourable. And there have been loads of great goals over the last two rounds of games that we've had this week. So go and check all of them out. Just watch all of the highlights on YouTube. Do yourselves a favour.
As Kenny alluded to there, I thought that it was a great game with some great goals, but the Faraoni goal towards the end, which was also the clincher, was a fantastic goal because he sets it up with his left foot and hits it with the right. For someone who's severely left-footed, I enjoyed the ambidextrousness of the goal.
Yeah, I mean, I have to side with Kenny here, but he's got a lot more time.
This is because you're Brit and you're not used to these fancy moves.
I thought Pellegrini's was pretty fancy.
I see them on a daily basis.
We'll put it to the listeners. We'll have a Twitter poll. And we'll have a Twitter poll and see who agrees with Kenny and who agrees with Baz. And we'll report back on that next week. Baz, you wanted to give... is this an honourable for Mike Maignan? Or is it a bit of both, a dishonourable for the Juve fan?
I mean, the less we mention the Juve fan, the better. But essentially... the whole of Italy was slightly shocked by the footage, and more to the point, the audio of a Juventus fan racially abusing Mike Maignan while he was warming up. To Juventus's credit, they immediately spotted this guy out and they've banned him from the stadium. And I think there could be further punishment, although the FIGC seems to be a little bit lukewarm about this. But I want to turn this into a positive moment and give a honorable mention to Mike Maignan, who, besides being a phenomenal keeper, also made a very strong statement against racism as a whole. And I think you should go check his statement out, because he said, "I'm not a victim of racism. I am Mike, standing up, black and proud. As long as we'll be able to raise our voices and make a difference, we'll do it." Good on you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for that. Great honorable. Kenny, you wanted to give... this is not a goals honourable, but it's an honourable for goals.
Yeah, this is an honourable for Croatia World Cup silver medal loser Kalinic for his two goals against Salernitana for Verona. He had a horrible season of it last year. I think he had about three lengthy spells out, but back in the reckoning and making his presence felt and winning a valuable point for Verona in what I think is looking like it might be a bit of a challenging season for them.
And while we're on the topic of that Croatia team, Baz, even Perisic showed up at the San Siro.
Yeah, following fresh from their Inter's victory against Fiorentina, where Perisic actually got a goal, he was then spotted the subsequent night looking very dapper in the stands watching Milan. And he also posted on his social media, Inter scout Ivan Perisic. There are rumors going around Milan that Perisic, whose contract is about to run out, will be doing a reverse Calhanoglu. I'm not sure about that. But at the same time, it's always a little bit weird to see a player who plays for the rival club sitting in the stands watching a game like that.
Yeah. And I'm afraid I'm going to steal your social media honorable this week. Which goes to Martin Deroon for his fantastic tweet an accompanying video. I think the tweet just said, "I bet Messi doesn't have to put up with this." And he went into the club shop early in the morning, met with the staff there, and he speaks to the camera and he says, "I'm going to pay for the first free kits of people that come in and get Martin de Roon on the back. And I'm going to sign them as well." And then he's just waiting in the shop and just waiting in the shop all day long. And the staff come over to him and they're like, "I'm sorry, we're just going to have to close the shop."
It's so good.
It's just really well acted. And love his sense of humor.
I want to be his friend. How do we make this happen?
Yeah, we need to let him know that he's got an honorable. Maybe he'll come on the podcast. But until we sort that out, you'll have to part with us. That's all we've got time for this week. If you don't already, please do subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your audio. We'll speak to you again next week. Until then, enjoy the football.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.